Hello and welcome to South Asia Chat, a podcast series brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I'm Raghav Khatri, research analyst at ISAS, and I will be your host for today's episode. We are thrilled to welcome Dr. Ronjoy Sen, Senior Research Fellow and Research Lead of the Politics, Society and Governance Cluster at ISAS. Dr. Sen will be sharing insights on South Asia outlook for the year 2024 with an emphasis on domestic politics and governance. Welcome, Dr. Sen.
Thank you, Raghav, for having me here.
The year 2024 is a major election year in South Asia, with Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, India, and Pakistan having their national elections. Could you assess the importance of elections in these four largest South Asian nations and what they mean for the region and for democracy?
Right, Raghav, this is a very large and broad question, but I'll try and address this briefly. So you're right, four of the major South Asian nations, namely Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, India and Pakistan, do have their elections scheduled for this year. And Bangladesh, of course, had its elections last Sunday. And, we have the results, if not the complete results, but more or less, we know the trend where, Awami League and Sheikh Hasina, Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina, have won a fourth straight term in power, with the Awami League winning roughly 75% of the seats. We also know that the major opposition party, the Bangladesh Nationalist Party or the BNP, boycotted the elections. So in a sense, the election was a no contest in some ways. The turnout was also quite low. Official statistics suggest that the turnout was roughly around 42%, but informally, others have suggested that the turnout was even lower. And another sort of critical element of the elections in Bangladesh was that, whereas the opposition parties boycotted the elections, There were several independents that stood for the elections, and amongst them, a majority were, Awami League party members. So in a sense, you had, the Awami League and several other candidates propped by the Awami League standing for elections. So in a sense, a vast majority of this 298 seats in the Bangladeshi parliament will be won, either by the Awami League or its supporters. So in a sense, what we really have in Bangladesh is a one-party democracy at the moment. In fact, we've had in initial responses, the U.S. State Department has said that the elections in Bangladesh were not free and fair. But at the same time, Washington has added that it's still going to go ahead and work with Bangladesh. In a sense, that seems to be the message globally as well as in South Asia. So India was one of the first to congratulate Sheikh Hasina, and Prime Minister Modi sent a message right after the results were announced, saying that India sort of welcomes results and looks forward to working with the Awami League. So in a sense, even though the elections were not free or fair by any stretch of the imagination, it seems that worldwide the elections are being accepted, and in particularly by the South Asian nations as well as global powers like the US. So moving to Pakistan, which is scheduled to hold its election next. It's scheduled for the 8th of February, but there are some reports suggesting that the elections might be postponed due to weather conditions, etc. But even if it is postponed, it probably won't be postponed by too many days. Here again, we find a situation where the elections might not be as free or fair as they should be. So, we are aware that former Prime Minister Imran Khan is still in jail because of various charges, including corruption against his name. He's of course contesting this, and he's gone to court, but there is no guarantee that Imran Khan will be allowed to contest. In fact, it is almost a certainty that he won't be allowed to contest. What's a bit more worrying is that his party, the Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf, PTI, is also being facing severe barriers in contesting the elections. So several of the PTI's candidates' nominations have been rejected. Of course, the PTI is contesting these in court, as well as challenging the Election Commission of Pakistan's decisions. So if the PTI, does not contest or faces insurmountable barriers in contesting election, the quality of the election will be in some doubt. But if you leave aside Imran Khan and the PTI, which still commands a remarkable degree of popularity. In fact, in some surveys that were conducted in mid-2023, Imran Khan actually received the highest approval ratings for any leader in Pakistan, and his party, the PTI, also was the front runner. But if you take the PTI and Imran Khan out of the equation, it really is a contest between the two traditional rivals, the Pakistan Muslim League, or the PML, and the Pakistan People's Party. And in this race, it seems like the Pakistan Muslim League is ahead, at least going by surveys. And its prime ministerial candidate is former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif, who has recently returned to Pakistan after spending a few years in exile. He too, like Imran Khan, faces corruption charges and actually has been banned from politics for a 14-year corruption sentence. But the PML has found some ways to circumnavigate this ban, and he's at least eligible, it seems, to contest for the coming elections. Of course, no election or no political story in Pakistan is complete without the presence of the army. And here we find that the Pakistani army, or the armed forces, appear to be backing the PML, which means that the PML and the Sharifs, besides their sort of the edge that they have in the popularity ratings against the PPP, also has an edge vis-a-vis the backing of the army. So that's Pakistan. And if we move very quickly to Sri Lanka, Sri Lanka is scheduled to have its both its parliamentary as well as presidential elections this year. Here there are not too much doubts about the election being free and fair, or sort of an equal playing field. But what we see is that situation politically is quite messy, and most analysts feel that the country might be headed towards a hung parliament, with no party being able to cross the 113 seats which are required for a simple majority in the House. The presidential elections too don't seem to be a clear-cut affair, with the current president, Ranil Wickremesinghe, is of course one of the front runners, but there is no guarantee that he will be re-elected. In fact, he needs a sort of a coalition of support within in Sri Lanka to come back to power. So in Sri Lanka, the situation seems to be in quite a bit of flux. And of course, India is also going to elections in probably In April, May, the dates haven't been announced, but definitely by May, we should have the results, and we can talk about the Indian elections maybe in your sort of coming questions.
What do you think will be the major factors determining the outcome of the Indian general elections in 2024?
Right, so election campaigns are as complicated as the elections themselves. Of course, the BJP government will play up its sort of track record over not just the last 5 years, but going back to 2014, and it'll of course emphasize its record on development or Vikas, and one of the sort of favored slogans of the government and Prime Minister Modi is, sabke saath, sabke vikas, which roughly translates into sort of government, good governance for all. So that's something that the government will play up, but it'll also sort of play up a host of other factors, including two sort of fairly recent ones. One is of course the inauguration of the Ram Temple in Ayodhya, which is happening later this month, and elections will probably be announced soon afterwards. And this has been one of the staples in the election manifestos of the BJP. The building of a Ram Temple in Ayodhya, and that promise will in fact be sort of delivered in later this month. So that's something that the BJP is sure to play up. And we must not forget that the rise of the BJP, if you go back to the early 1990s, when it was actually a fairly a marginal party at the time, rise of the BJP has been very much founded on the Ram Temple and the Ayodhya issue. So this is something that is definitely going to be played up. Another staple of the BJP's political manifesto has been the abrogation of Article 370, which is an article in the Indian Constitution which gave a special status to Kashmir. So in 2019, the Article 370 was abrogated by a constitutional amendment. Very soon after, Prime Minister Modi came back for a second term. But very recently, the Supreme Court, after a long delay, actually heard several petitions or challenges to the constitutional amendment abrogating Article 370. And the Supreme Court actually upheld the abrogation of Article 370. So this is also something that will play a role or will be played up in the election campaign, but I believe not to the extent that the Ram Temple, which is, I think, a far more important plank of the BJP, as well as a far more emotive issue amongst India's sort of 80% Hindus, who constitute 80% of India's population. So it'll be a combination, I think, of the of the track record of the government on various issues, including development. And I must also mention that usually foreign policy does not play a very big role in Indian elections, but the government and the BJP will also play up the recent hosting of the G20 summit in India, and the sort of year-long events that accompanied it. So it'll sort of show the government as one that has put India on the world stage, and has sort of made India both an economic powerhouse as well as a major global player in international politics.
Makes sense. What can the opposition, India Alliance, do to compete with the BJP? And how important do you think will PM Modi be to the BJP's campaign?
Right. So the last set of elections that we just talked about in northern India meant that the footprint of the Congress in the Hindi belt has really become very marginal. So that has, in a sense, dealt a blow to the India Alliance, where, if the Congress had done well, the Congress would have been the pool around which the India Alliance would have formed and then, contested elections. With the Congress having performed, quite poorly, with the exception of, having formed government in Telangana, I think the India Alliance itself has been somewhat weakened. And there is a sense of lack of cohesion within the India Alliance. So right after the recent assembly results, the India Alliance was supposed to have a sort of meeting of its leaders that got postponed. And we've heard sort of, discordant voices and bickering within the India Alliance. But to compete with the BJP, I think, one of the things that they really need to sort of do, in terms of sort of practicality is really, get down and sit down, talk and work out the, seat sharing amongst, not just the Congress as well as the various other regional parties. So that will involve a lot of give and take. And we've already seen some of the most strong regional party leaders like Mamata Banerjee in West Bengal saying that it's really unwilling to, give much space to the Congress. So that's something that they need to do right away because, there's hardly, that much time, going ahead into the elections. But besides just the sort of the pragmatics of getting the seat sharing formulas in place, it also needs to, get its narrative together. So, when we were talking about, in answering one of the earlier questions on, what the BJP might be doing in the general elections, it has a clear-cut narrative. And the narrative, as I said, will center around development, foreign policy, but also on issues like the Ram Temple, etc. And beyond that, we'll also see Prime Minister Modi playing an outsized role, right? The campaign of the BJP will be very much constructed around the issues that I talked about, but also around the persona of Prime Minister Modi, who still retains a huge amount of popularity in India, despite having served two terms. So the India Alliance, I think in that sense, will find it difficult to compete with the BJP, both in terms of a narrative that they can sort of put forward to counter the BJP. It also will face an issue, a real issue, in terms of one leader who can sort of counter Prime Minister Modi. So as of now, the India Alliance is such that there is no single leader who sort of commands any kind of pan-Indian sort of visibility or popularity. So that's that's something that's going to be played to the detriment of the India Alliance. But I think pragmatically, the India Alliance needs really to get its sort of seat sharing formula in place, but also leaving aside a leader, because there's really no leader in the opposition who can counter Prime Minister Modi, but at least get a narrative to counter the BJP, possibly focusing on price rise, or focusing on issues like the higher rates of unemployment and underemployment in India. So it really needs to get its narrative in place, and it needs to do that right now if it wants to compete with the BJP, which definitely has the upper hand heading into the elections.
Thank you so much for your time and insight, Dr. Sen.
Thanks, Raghav, for having me here. Pleasure talking.
You are listening to South Asia Chat. To learn more about our work, please visit us at isas.nus.edu.sg. You can also get updates from our social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter.